Now on Sports Talk, it's SC Wild with Major Billy Downer of the Department of Natural Resources. Major Downer is here to take your questions about the great outdoors in South Carolina. Give him a call at 888-898-2525. It's SC Wild from DNR on the Sports Talk Radio Network.
Indeed, always a pleasure to have the Major Billy Downer with us here. SC Wild from DNR on Sports Talk. He always loves to talk with you if you have a question about something in the great outdoors. Maybe you have a question related to policy or the way things are done at DNR or through state government when it comes to hunting and fishing and things like that in South Carolina. He is always happy to take your questions and your comments. And our phone number is 888-898-2525. 888-898-2525. Major Downer, welcome in, sir. How are you?
Always a pleasure, Phil. Another Wednesday night with you, and been a good week in the last week since we talked. Had a big day last week. Thursday, the governor did a ceremonial signing. He'd already actually signed the bill, but he signed the Senate 96, the Boating Safety Act, again. And that ushered in what we've already talked about, the new boating safety requirement born after July 1st, 2007 is required now to have boater education before they can operate a boat of 10 horsepower or greater, boat, jet ski, or similar device. So a big day at 200 people there at the lake, at the Columbia Sailing Club. It was a really big crowd, surprised me. Governor and his wife were there.
Mm-hmm.
Several senators. Senator Chip Kansen was there, who authored the bill, and several representatives. Lots of sheriffs were there. A lot of law enforcement departments were represented, and a lot of people, including families, who had lost loved ones in the last several years on Lake Murray, were there as well. So very sobering for them to see this law come to fruition. We've talked about it a lot, but again, just a great day. So 200 people coming out for that is just a really big deal to see that many people come out for something. So it was really good.
I was going to say that there had to be, for people like yourself and others, you've pushed publicly for this, others have pushed publicly for this since that tragedy there on the lake a few years ago. There has to be a great deal of satisfaction for all involved to see this thing finally come to fruition and now be part of the law. And it's a good law. It shouldn't be anything that anybody should frown about. This is a good law that will help everybody, I would say.
Yes, it is. And you're right. And so many people have pushed for this. I mean, I thought since 2015, when we did the statewide voting meetings across the state, and that's what the public was asking for.
Mm-hmm.
In those meetings was increased voter education, or a voter education requirement. So we joined about 36 other states with a mandatory voter education. There's around 46 states that have some type of voter education, but 36 or 7 now that have mandatory. And those are states with big water, most of them, all. But anyway, again, yes, great to see it. And while we're on water, we might as well talk about Labor Day coming up in the next month. I know it's a couple weeks away, but wow, the summer has blown by. And, mm-hmm. We're talking about wrapping up the summer, just reminding folks that, one last big hurrah, one big weekend there with hunting coming in, dove season around the corner, deer season, literally less than 2 weeks away on the Columbia area, Orangeburg, and down the low country. Boating will be, that one big weekend on Labor Day, and just remind folks, don't forget, don't let your senses dull the fact, hey, we made it through the summer, we're good, it's still one more weekend, big weekend coming up. Let's keep thinking about safety, making sure you got your life jackets on board where you can get to them, they fit everybody, your lights are working at night, and you have your whistle, your registration straight, just simple things. But on the safety side, life jackets, whistle, and your running lights, just remember, always drive defensively. You know, keep watchful out for everyone else around you and expect the unexpected, particularly that person falling off of the skis or tube, because it's going to happen before you know it.
Let me ask you.
Be prepared for that.
Let me ask you while you're talking about being on the water and all this. I was over. How familiar are you with the Waccamaw River area, the Waccawachie Marina area, that part of the Intracoastal Waterway? You have much familiarity with that?
I've been there a little bit, but go ahead.
No, I'm just going to ask you some questions. I mean, just being there myself, looking out over there, it seems like a very busy area. One thing I do notice, though, from standing out there is it's a no-wake zone. And from what I can tell, it looks like most boaters, if not all, recognize this and respect it, and they do slow it down and keep their wake. They eliminate their wake, I guess. It's a no-wake zone. They eliminate their wake as they go through that little area. That has to be satisfying to see from your standpoint, because that's something you preach about all the time.
Sure it is, but, you know, when you bring up the Intracoastal Waterway, it's something to you. The Intracoastal Waterway, there's, you know, people like to use it as a thoroughfare to get back and forth. They don't want to go slow the whole time. And you don't have to, except for the no-wake zone portions of it. And you just got to watch out. And, you know, the problem is the Intracoastal Waterway is so narrow for much of it, particularly when you get behind the Myrtle Beach area, Waccamaw, like you're talking about, off the river there, the river comes through. And if you get a lot of traffic, any bit of traffic, it's hard to go wide open when you got two or three boats in front of you. You've got to slow down, and people just need to understand. You need to be patient. When it's busy out there, it's not worth hurting somebody. And the Intracoastal Waterway is just a great case in point of just slowing it down for congestion in tight areas, even if it is still an area where you can make a wake. Sometimes you got to slow down anyway because of the boats and yield to those other boats. And, you know, and it gets harder as we have so many people using our waterways that are on boats that don't require registration, or paddle boards or kayaks. They can't take a big wake. And I know it's aggravating. You just got to keep slowing down, but it's better than hurting somebody, cause somebody to get hurt or much worse, get killed because of just being negligent. So watch your wake. That's the important point.
And the other thing, too, is I mentioned Waccawachie Marina, which is a pretty good-sized marina, and I guess they have these things up and down the waterway and these rivers. I just, yep. From your travels up and down the rivers and the waterway and all that, what's your experience with the marinas? Do you have a favorite one that you like to kind of stop and hang out with? And the people at the marinas, they just seem like just really cool, laid-back folks who just enjoy being on the boats, enjoy being on the water, and hanging outside on a nice, sunny South Carolina afternoon.
They do, but they're there to service boat owners, and a lot of those marinas have fueling stations. And, again, they're real nice until you mess up somebody's boat just trying to fuel. Yeah, and a lot of those marinas are off of the Intracoastal Waterway. Through a ditch, basically. A lot of the marinas are, and that makes it nice. But some aren't. I think of the Swing Bridge a lot right there. We walk them on. The Swing Bridge is, you know, just area congestion. A lot of people is landing right there. And it just, you know, Peachtree Landing, it is a lot of congestion there, and it's Myrtle Beach. And you see people there just going too fast, not slowing down. And just, you know, wish they'd think a little more about that. But that's worth mentioning as we get ready. You know, the show today is about a lot of things. You know, we continue to deal with alligator complaints week to week. We talked about that on our last show. Talked about with our alligator biologist about what we're doing and just about how alligators kind of live, how they're a part of our ecosystem. They're not a bad thing. And we remind people, you know, to remember that not every alligator is a bad alligator, but it doesn't take much to make a bad alligator. And feeding is the main problem. And you can be purposely feeding or accidentally feeding that can cause issues. Cleaning fish on the dock is our biggest problem with folks. And alligators get used to that. But again, Remember, if you have an alligator issue, you can call our radio room at 1-800-922-5431. That's 1-800-922-5431, and we'll get someone in touch with you about the alligator that can take care of it, or at least answer questions for you.
Chris shared a video before he left us. He shared a video. This isn't about alligators, but he sent me a video. He said, you'll like talking with the major about this. It's a video of golfers. I don't know where they are. It looks like they're in a mountainous area. And the video picks up where a bear, a black bear, has come out of the woods and yanked the golf clubs of one of the golfers off his cart and drags his golf bag with the clubs into the woods. And here's the golfer with his driver in his hands. And he's walking towards that bear in the woods, and he starts screaming at him. And the bear is, like, protecting the clubs. Like, don't come near me. I've got your clubs. And the golfer's like, what do I do, you know? So,
well, you know why the bear had his clubs, right?
No.
Because he had food in there. Yeah. He had snacks in there. And that's why the bear grabbed it. They have a tremendous sense of smell. Mm-hmm. The bear didn't need his clubs. He didn't need a 9-iron, I promise. He was looking for that honey bun or that pack of nabs or whatever that guy had in that bag on the side.
Yeah.
It smelled good. But that brings up another point. You know, we've talked a little bit about this, but, you know, we've talked about bears in the past and how they act like deer. They run away. And typically that is what our black bear in South Carolina continues to react to humans. But it's important to note they are a large creature, 300 to 400 pounds,
mm-hmm.
that can cause damage and not – they don't understand the damage they can cause. They're protecting their food. They're protecting their cubs. They're protecting their way out. Sometimes if you get between them and the way out, they may charge you trying to just get away. But it doesn't matter. If a bear nips you, a bear nips you, it's going to hurt. And it's going to be bad. You know, obviously, they've got canines and they have strong jaws and – no one wants to get bitten by accident, and it doesn't make it all okay just because it's an accident. But we need to remind folks, you know, to keep your distance from bears, you know, keep your trash sealed up. That's the biggest problem in the upstate is folks with trash cans and the bears getting into the trash cans. And they are hard workers when it comes to getting into food sources. They'll get into dumpsters. They'll get into your trash can. They'll rip them apart. They'll rip deer feeders apart to get the corn.
Mm.
It's what they do. It's an easy food source for them. So just try to be bear-wise on that. But, you know, we are – it's hard to believe. But we are – here we are. Literally, it's August, and we're looking at deer season on the 15th.
Wow.
And that's going to be, you know, in the lower part of our state, Columbia area, down through Orangeburg, Calhoun.
Are you talking about August 15th?
Yes, sir. August 15th, gun season.
Wow.
In Orangeburg County, Charleston County. Yes, sir. It won't be gun season for another good portion of the state until the 1st of September. That's here in Sumter County and on above. But, yes, it's going to be deer season in less than 2 weeks. So, believe it or not, in this hot weather, people are putting corn out right now. For deer and getting their stands ready. And just want to remind folks, if you're getting ready for deer season, just a couple quick reminders. When you're checking your deer stands for safety's sake, you know, make sure that you watch out for poison ivy, poison oak on that tree, on that stand. Check your stand, visibly inspect it for that plant, poison sumac, so it doesn't get you all, you know, if I touch it, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be one big itchy person.
Mm.
It's going to be a mess. And prednisone is my best friend. But also check your stand to make sure it's mechanically sound, structurally sound, and that you shake it and make sure it's visibly, you know, good to go. Make sure screws haven't fallen out, haven't got rusty. Shake it so make sure it's not loose on the tree before you get up in it. And then when you get toward the top, take a can of wasp spray with you.
Mm.
People think that's funny, but it's not. A last thing you want to do is get to the top of the stand in a cramped quarters and a wasp nest come at you. Ooh. Wasp come to attack you. Because the first thing you're going to think about doing is jumping out that stand. And if your stand's got any height to it, you're going to get hurt. Sprain an ankle, break an ankle. So it's important to clean those stands, inspect them before you go hunting in them, particularly this early in the season. Mosquitoes going to be everywhere. Holy cow. I do not like hunting this early because it's just so hot. Mosquitoes, yellow flies, you name it, wasps, everything's out there. So it's just a big deal to kind of take your time, inspect those stands, make sure they're good to go. And when you go in this kind of weather, when you go in August, you better have a thermocell with you to make sure the mosquitoes are off of it, because it'll be a miserable experience. If you're anywhere around wet grass or in pine thickets with pine straw, as much rain as we've had this year, there, mosquitoes are everywhere.
Now, let me ask you this, talking about the stands. And I, you know, when I ride down the highways, even down the interstate, through some rural areas, you can look out there, you can see the deer stands, right? How much on a year-to-year basis will they deteriorate between one deer season and another? I mean, are they built to last, or, I mean, you know, what is their breakdown ratio?
That's a good question. You know, I grew up in a day, Phil, when people made stands out of wood, and wood rots, you know, eventually, mm-hmm. and nails get loose and those things. But today's stands are mostly made of prefab metal. They slip inside each other. They've got, you know, intersection pieces. But anywhere you've got an intersecting piece on a stand, you've got a weak point. You've got a place that water can gather and rust can form. And anytime metal rusts, it breaks down. And when it breaks down, it gets weak. And when it gets weak, it can break. And even though a stand said, you know, most stands are made for 250 pounds. Well, let's face it, a two-man stand, you got a 250, 275-pound man and a 100-pound child in there, mm-hmm. you're over the weight limit. People are bigger. And so you need to pay attention to those weight limits and just make sure that your stand fits. And even without that, withstanding, not all withstanding, there's a lot of guys making stands in their backyard, welding things up. They're great stands. Nothing wrong with that at all. But, again, anytime you got a weld point, you got a joint between two pieces of metal, you got a place where water can gather. If you get any pinholes, water gets in that metal, because most stands are made of metal tubing, either square tubing or round tubing. Most of them metal tubing, so they're hollow. And if water gets inside of that cavity, it will rust. And again, if it rusts, it will break. So I encourage folks to go out those stands. So how long will a stand last? Under good conditions, probably 4 or 5 years. If you treat them, if you check them, you know, go out there. And I always encourage folks to paint the stands every couple of years just to put a fresh coat of paint and keep rust from getting on there. Mm-hmm. Sand that rust off, surface rust off. Put a fresh coat of green paint on there. Check all your spots. I've got stands that I've had for, you know, 8-10 years. If you keep a good, you know, good care of them, they'll last, but you just can't leave one out there unattended. Let limbs and everything grow on it, knock on it, limbs fall on it, bend it, and expect it to withstand the test of time. So most stands are probably good 4 to 5 years, but they should last a lot longer, but it depends on how much you care for them, and that goes into inspecting that stand from top to bottom and making sure it's in good shape. And again, if sometimes it's out of your control. Mm-hmm. Tree can fall, a limb can fall and hit the stand and then break it or weaken it. And you got to pay attention to those things.
Have you heard anything?
And I know people.
I know people
that get to the stand mm-hmm. like that, though, which all it, Phil.
Yep.
They get to the stand, they're ready to hunt, they hadn't checked the stand out, they get there, and it's bent, and they're like, well, I'm sitting here. Okay. So you climb in that stand, you already know it's got a weak point, it's bent. You're asking for trouble. It's not worth that deer hunt. Take your time. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No. I was just going to ask you, we got about 2.5 minutes. With the season opening in the Midlands area August 15th, have you gotten any reports from your folks about what it looks like out there this year for deer hunting? Is it bountiful? Is it plentiful out there for the hunters?
absolutely a great question. I can tell you this. The farmers will tell you it's off the chart. We've probably had more requests this year, or I'm not going to say more than ever, but I would say that this year has been a high request from farmers for what we call depredation permits, which is deer are causing crop damage, and farmers get permits to shoot deer in their fields in the evening when they start getting in the fields. And we, our officers get permits. They have times. They have to, you know, control that time they can shoot, who can be on the permit, those kind of things. We've had a lot of requests for that this year. Again, I'd say it's a high year for that, which indicates that it's a very prolific deer, a year for deer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fawns being dropped, a lot of deer being seen. So if that's any indication, it's going to be a great year. You're going to see a lot of does, you're going to see a lot of deer. If you see a lot of does, you got a chance of seeing a buck. Again, it's not always about the buck. It's about seeing deer, and this is going to be a good year.
All right. As people are preparing, got about a minute left, some quick words of wisdom on preparation. What should the hunters be doing now to get ready for the start of the season? What's the two or three of the most important things they must have?
Well, make sure you got your big game permit. You know, if you get a license, make sure you got a combination hunting and fishing license, which is going to include your big game permit. If you just get a state hunting license, or you just buy a fishing license and now all of a sudden you want to go deer hunting, if you got a fishing license, you want to get a state hunting license and a big game permit, because whitetail deer are part of our big game. So that licensing is required there. You're going to have tags. And now remember, you have to have tags for both bucks and does, and you cannot shoot does, until September 15th. So any tags you have, even though you may receive your tags in the mail, like I did just yesterday in the mail, our folks were receiving the deer tags.
Mm.
Just because you have them means you can't use them. You have to follow the directions. Depends on where you are in the state when you can use them. But folks in this area, in the Midlands, September 15th, they'll be able to start using those doe tags. So keep that in mind. Again, inspect your stands for safety. Look out for wasps. Make sure you clear those out as well. And have fun, but it's going to be a hot one before we get back together. It's going to be, it's going to be deer season. So, again, be careful. Be safe. Take a bottle of water with you, because you don't want to overheat out there.
Well, when we get back together in 2 weeks, it'll be just getting underway around here in the Midlands. So we'll see if you have been out there and if you've had any success out there.
Absolutely. We'll talk about dove season on our next show, getting ready for the 1st of September.
Sounds great. Have a great couple of weeks, Major. Always a pleasure having you with us, and we'll talk to you later on this month.
Thanks, sir.
That is Major Billy Downer from the Department of Natural Resources here with us on Sports Talk. Always appreciate him being on with us for SC Wild from DNR on Sports Talk. So hopefully you learned something about hunting around the state of South Carolina and getting ready for what should be a fantastic deer season in South Carolina.